The 23rd parak of Shabbos deals with some very fascinating issues, for example, borrowing and lending and various halachas that have to do with Shabbos guests and hiring of employees on Shabbos, how our speech, we have to be careful with what we say on Shabbos, preparing for after Shabbos, maybe to do a mitzvah. So there's a lot of interesting halachas that will come out of this parak. So the first Mishnah Aleph, talks about borrowing and lending of food on Shabbos. And the concern here is that if we have an official loan of something, then we may come to write down to record the loan so we don't forget it. That's the lender may record it. So what's going to be important in our Mishnah is we're going to distinguish between two forms of language that are used in Hebrew. One is halva'a, which is to loan something, and she'ela is also, but the implications are different. Halva'a is typically a longer term. For example, it's a minimum of 30 days, and the lender is giving it for 30 days and can't collect for 30 days, and that's where we're going to have the concern, because it's a longer term loan, that the lender is going to want to record that loan so he doesn't forget it, as opposed to using the language of she'ela. She'ela is a shorter term, in other words, that the lender can collect whenever he so desires, even within 30 days, even immediately. So there we're not going to have the concern that the lender is going to want to record, to write down that he gave the loan. So the Mishnah says as follows, she'el Adam echavero, somebody is permitted to borrow from his friend, kade yayin v'kade shemen, pitchers of wine, pitchers of oil, whatever it may be, ubilvad shelo yomar lo, as long as he doesn't use the language halveini, give me a loan, please lend to me, because then the lender is going to want to write it down because he knows that's a longer term loan. And similarly, v'chein ha'isha mechaverta kikaros, a woman borrowing from her friend some challah, loaves of bread, also don't use the language halveini, because if we use that language, then we have concern it may be written. We can say tenli, and based on the Mishnah, we can either even say the shashileini, to lend me. Now, we do not in English, and even in Hebrew, I don't know if they distinguish nowadays this way, so we have to be very careful when we are borrowing something to not say, please lend me, can I borrow something? We can say, give me, or something along those lines, so there's not that concern of writing. Now, the Mishnah says, how about if the lender doesn't trust the borrower? I'm concerned this borrower is not going to pay me back, and I'm not able to write it down. So how can we get the deal done so there's actually this loan without calling it a loan, and know that that lender is going to get paid back? So the Mishnah says, v'im eino ma'amino, if the lender doesn't trust that borrower to pay him back, and you can't say explicitly, this is a loan, maniach taliso eslo, the borrower can give him collateral, give him his talis, his cloak, for example, and don't say, I'm giving this to you as collateral, that'd be a similar problem. Leave it an unspoken understanding that he's simply giving that. Ve'ose imo cheshbon achar Shabbos, and afterward they can make a cheshbon, make a computation, how much was lent and how much is owed by the borrower, but do that after Shabbos. So that's to give something, a mashkon, but don't call it a mashkon on Shabbos. Give something so that the lender's feeling more comfort, and after Shabbos they'll have a make good as to how much is really owed. In a similar case, v'chein erev Pesach b'Yushalayim, if we have erev Pesach and it's falls on Shabbos b'Yushalayim, it's Yushalayim shechalios b'Shabbos, it fell on Shabbos, so the Korban Pesach is brought and somebody did not prepare and doesn't have his Korban Pesach ready. So he's got to go to somebody who has one. He's got to go to the seller and say, I need a Korban Pesach. But you can't discuss a price on Shabbos. You can't say, I'll pay you after Shabbos. We don't do business on Shabbos. So what do you do? So the similar thing, maniach taliso, the person who didn't prepare, the purchaser now, he leaves his cloak. He leaves something of value that's not muksa, etzlo, v'notel as pischo, and he can take the Korban Pesach, the animal, because he has to be makrivit on Shabbos, because it's Erev Pesach on Shabbos, so he needs that day. Ve'ose imo cheshbon la'achar yontav, and they can make a reckoning, a computation after yontav. You can't do it on yontav, which would be Motzei Shabbos and Sunday, so do it after yontav, make a computation, what is owed, pay him back, and get your cloak back at that point. Just a couple of interesting things that are brought la'alacha when it comes to lending sfarim. Indeed, the Mishnah Berurah says as follows. He brings down the Prima Gadin, dafilu im lava sfarim, shudvar mitzvah, even lending of sfarim. We said you have to be careful the language. Don't say halveini, and this is a mitzvah. I want to borrow your Gemara. You also can't say this is a halva because of the concern you may come to write down. Just another interesting point, the Shulchan Aruch paskens as follows when it comes to maniach talis, leaving that collateral there. We said that don't call it a mashkon. Why not? Because he says dahavi k'uvda dechol. That makes it like a mundane weekday activity. So we have to be careful about what we do and how we say it when it comes to that collateral. An interesting additional question is, how about returning a book on Shabbos? We've said we have concerns about borrowing a book. Don't use the language halveini. You can borrow it, but don't say it tenly. And you know there's an understanding you'll give it back, but how about returning it? So the Mishnah Berurah brings in the name of Tosfos. The Tosfos wrote, Dim Omer Belashon Chazara, if you say, I'm returning it, L'Hachzir V'lo B'Lashon Kriya, but you're not saying, I'm paying you back. That's the opposite concern is of give me a loan, let me pay you back. Then you're okay saying I'm returning it, but don't say I'm repaying you because we need a hecker. It needs to show that it's Shabbos, and we need to remember that we don't want to come and erase on Shabbos. For example, if it was recorded that somebody lent somebody, and now I'm saying I'm paying you back, we may come indeed to erase on Shabbos. So we have to be careful, even when returning a book, that it's returned in a careful way. I'm returning it to you, not I am paying you back. Now, nowadays, we don't distinguish between these languages of Priya, I am paying you back, and Chazar, I am returning to you it to you. So Rav Shlomo Zalman Arbach in the Shulchan Shlomo says, Lichora Asr, maybe we have a problem returning books on Shabbos, because if we say either one of those, we don't have a heker, we don't have it recognized for people careful not to write down. Maybe a solution, he doesn't mention this, but maybe a solution is just handing it to him and not saying anything, because that could be a heker. But in any case, there may be a svara to be lenient even without that. So indeed, a shaila should be asked. Mishnah Beis goes through various halachas as it deals with hosting guests on Shabbos. The Mishnah says as follows, Mona Adam es Orchav, Ves parparosav mipiv. It's permitted for a person to make a computation as to who is coming and who is not. That's his list of guests. And in addition, to go through what is on the menu, but not from a writing. He can do it orally from his memory. But if he goes through his written list of what he'll be serving, or the people who will be coming, the guest list, there is a major concern that he may come and erase things, strike them out. Oh, this guest isn't coming. Oh, he's bringing a friend. Maybe I should add somebody. Oh, I didn't have time to put up the rice, so to take that off of what's being served. So using of lists is of a concern, and when we have a concern that somebody is going to be erasing from the list, it's prohibited to use that list. We will go into some halacha on this after we finish the Mishnah. The next part is an interesting discussion of if we have a way, if we want to divide up, for example, you have a balabais that wants to divide up the food between the members of his household, and he wants to use some sort of lottery. So he's going to pull lots and see who gets which portion. So if it's not members of the family, there's a concern that they are going to come and compare. Mine is bigger than yours. Yours is bigger than mine, actually. And they're going to come and measure away the portions. An example would be if we have a bunch of people who chip in for a meal together, and they each chip in an equal amount, and they would divide up based on a lottery who's going to get which piece. And there's a real concern there, if they do it based on lottery, that they will come to measure the portions, and that's prohibited on Shabbos. But the assumption of our Mishnah is that when people are in the same household, for example, you have the father who's distributing the food to his children, that they're really not going to fight over it. Maybe they're going to fight, but hopefully they're not going to come to the extent that they're going to start measuring and weighing who got a larger or smaller piece. So the Mishnah says as follows, a mefis im banav vim b'nei beisel al ha-shulchan. It's permitted to cast lots in order to divide up with the food between his children and the various members of a household, because they're not going to come to measure. However, people that are not related, there is a serious problem, and it's prohibited to divide up the food based on lots. Now, this is talking about a problem on Shabbos. The problem of Shabbos, if you're dividing up the food, is because you may come to weigh and measure that. The implication is that's not a problem the rest of the week, where we're permitted to measure and weigh things. But yet there's another problem the rest of the week, and that is what is called misachek bekuvia, maybe a form of gambling. In other words, if people come and they contribute to a meal and they say, let's divide it up, and let's divide it up. And the various portions have different sizes. And I invest to buy in the meal, and I'm going to gamble. We're going to pull lots, or somebody's going to pull lots to divide up. I'm expecting to get a larger portion, not a smaller portion. And if I get a smaller portion or I get a larger portion, this is a form of gambling. So indeed, the Mishnah continues that if the point of the lottery is to divide up the pieces based on size, in other words, it's just how it's going to be. Whoever wins is going to get the bigger pieces. Whoever is going to get the smaller pieces is at risk of losing their money. And effectively, that person who's getting the smaller piece did expect it to get a bigger piece. He wanted to get a bigger piece. He's not going to simply intellectually say, no problem, I lost my money. He's still attached to his money, and he feels he lost out. And the person who takes the bigger piece is kind of, it's called an asmachta, he's kind of stealing from the person who only won out the smaller piece. So that's a concern during the weekday. It's a concern during the weekday also about dividing up food by lots. If the point is to divide up larger pieces, larger portions, and smaller portions, that is mishum kubia, that is a form of gambling, and it's a machlokis in the poskim. Does this only apply to people who are not in the same family, or even to members of the same family, if we're dividing up the portions larger and smaller that way, even during the week, that could be problematic. The Mishnah is now going to conclude in a case where people who are not family members are indeed allowed to draw lots in order to divide up portions on Yontiv, and it's talking about the Kohanim at the time of the Beis Hamikdash. The Mishnah says as follows, Umitilin Chalashin, it is permitted for the Kohanim to draw lots, Al HaKodshim B'Yomtov, if they're dividing up the Kodshim, the sacrifices that were offered on Yontiv, it's permitted for them to divide up the lots so they don't come to fight over who's getting what. So pulling those lots would be permitted to divide up their portions. Of Allo ala manos, however, at least the primary reading of this is that if the manos is referring to the korbanos that were brought the prior day, they could have divided up the prior day and they waited to Yontiv. There, we're not permitted to cast lots. That should have been done before Yontiv. Now with Yontiv, we can only divide up by lots what was sacrificed on Yontiv and not was from prior to Yontiv. Just as some interesting halacha lemaisa about reading from lists and use of lists on Shabbos, we said indeed that it is problematic. Now, indeed, there's two problems for it. Number one, we mentioned that somebody may come to use a list and may come to erase from the list. For example, when I'm not serving that, this guest is not coming. In addition, and a second area of concern is what's called Shtarei Hedyosos, because Chazal instituted that we should not read certain types of documents on Shabbos. For example, business documents and the like. So these type of lists may be too much similar to Shtarei Hedyosos, business documents. Or it's simply a concern if we're using these type of non-Judaica lists on Shabbos, we may come to eventually use business lists and business documents and view them, read them on Shabbos. So we're going to have to deal with, in certain circumstances, both of these concerns. So our first situation, this is talked about in the Sefer Orcha Shabbos. There's a gabbai in a shul, and he prepared a list of those who are davening, who he's going to give aliyahs to, or other kibudim. Indeed, the psak is that it's prohibited to read from that list on Shabbos because the person, the gabbai, may come to erase from that list. It happens oftentimes when there's a simcha and there's a bar mitzvah and you have a prepared list of kibudim. That is a concern. Now, a solution to that is that gabbai can appoint somebody as a shomer. Please make sure that I don't come and erase from the list. And as long as that shomer is there and alert to the situation, then it's not going to be a problem using that list. We have another similar situation if we have a bris milah. And somebody prepared a list of kibudim for the bris milah that indeed could be problematic using that list. However, they're here. We have a couple of heterim. Number one is if the person who's reading the list isn't an official person who prepared the list or has the permission to erase from the list, meaning you give it to somebody standing there or a younger member of the family who doesn't have permission to change the list, then we don't have the concern that anything is going to be erased. So that would be heter number one, is that not the father or the somebody official using the list, but somebody else. And another thing is even if it's the official person, the father, whatever it may be, is using the list, again, appoint a shomer to make sure that nothing is erased from the list. Another discussion piece in the Orach HaShabbos is how about a woman using a menu on Shabbos? She prepared a list of what she's going to be serving on Shabbos. And here he says this is problematic for two reasons. Number one, she may come and erase from the list. And number two, we also have the gzeira that she may come, gzeira that you may come to read Shtari Hadyotos, the business document. So it falls under those, both of those problems. Now with a shomer, we can get rid of the first problem. The first problem, meaning we have somebody who is supervising, watching over a shomer, preventing any erasure from the list, but it doesn't take care of that second problem of the reading of Shtarei Hadyota. So indeed, that's problematic. Nonetheless, the Magen Avraham says in certain situations, it's going to be permitted. For example, if you have a list for a Sudas Mitzvah, the decree against Shtarei Hadyotos, the second concern, doesn't apply. So for example, if you have guests over who don't have a place to eat, that would be a sudas mitzvah that the prohibition wouldn't apply, or a sheva brachas or a bar mitzvah both on Shabbos, but apparently just a regular Shabbos meal would be problematic. The Orach HaShabbos does have a footnote discussing a regular Shabbos meal. Just to read a little bit more from this, we have Rabbi Ribiat's Lamed Ted Melachot book, the 39 Melachos on Shabbos, and he does say that when it comes to reading a guest list on Shabbos, that on Shabbos or Yom Tov, it's generally forbidden for a host or hostess to read a guest list or to read a menu of what's going to be served at the meal because of the likelihood of inadvertently revising the list while reviewing it. And this happens if you have a simcha, you have a kiddush, a bar mitzvah, sheva brachas, whatever it may be. Lists are often used. Nonetheless, he brings that according to some poskim, there is a basis to permit having such a list and designating someone other than the hostess, as we mentioned before, somebody who doesn't feel the responsibility, it doesn't have the permission. He doesn't mention that, but he mentions, for example, someone, i.e., who does not feel the responsibility of the serving to, in order to read the list. Why? Because someone other than the hostess or her family is not familiar or concerned with the accuracy of the list and therefore has no reason to revise it. So that's all interesting. The Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach on this point says, Shemutar li'isha atzma li'hisponen bechetef berishimat hamanot. It would be permitted for a woman to take a cursory glance, a quick glance at what she's serving in order to remember the order. Don't study it. Don't take a quick, an extended analysis, but a quick look just to jar the memory indeed would be permitted. This raises other interesting questions of using a list of cholim for a mishaberech in the shul. So is that problematic? Because, and there, Rav Nissim Karelitz says as follows, Shemutar ima amin alav shomer, if you appoint a shomer to watch over, it would be permitted. Why? Because the tefillah for the cholim is a mitzvah, an absolute mitzvah, and the shomer would ensure that the gabai, whoever's reading the list, doesn't come to erase somebody who got better or somebody who Rahman al-Islam passed away. So we need that shomer there to ensure that that doesn't happen. But because, again, it's for a mitzvah gemura, indeed it would be permitted. Mishnah Gimel, we need a quick introduction. There's a famous pasuk in the Navi of Yoshiyahu where he urges Klal Yisrael to honor the Shabbos. And there's a famous pasuk, Mimtzo chafetzecha v'daber davar, that's part of a famous pasuk, the rest of it is famous as well. And the literal explanation of this pasuk is that on Shabbos we cannot pursue our own affairs, we have to be careful about the words we speak. That's Mimtzo chafetzecha v'daber davar, daber davar is dibur. So we learn a number of things from these pasuki, but in a high level we learn from the words Mimtzo chafetzecha that we have to be involved not in our affairs, for example, business affairs, but we have to be involved only in Shabbos. And Chazal learn certain prohibitions that we shouldn't be participating in commercial transactions. We shouldn't be looking at what we need to do in our business the next day. We shouldn't be reading contracts, for example, even obviously without writing the Yisr D'Oraisa or Ksiva. But just being involved in commercial activities would violate this clause in the pasuk Mimtzo Cheftzecha that Yeshayahu was insisting on. And in addition, V'daver Davar, speaking words that we have to be careful how we speak on Shabbos. This forbids even discussing certain matters, for example, business activities, negotiating a deal, trying to sell your Toyota Camry while sitting in shul next to somebody, computing calculations, how the business is doing, or even discussing plans for after Shabbos for activities that we are forbidden to do on Shabbos itself. So don't speak on Shabbos about things that you can't do. I am taking a flight right after Shabbos. You can't fly on Shabbos, so don't speak about flying after Shabbos. So we're going to have examples of these issues, of these prohibitions in our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says as follows, Lo yiskor adam po'alim b'Shabbos. You have to be careful about what you speak about. You can't hire people on Shabbos. We're obviously not talking about signing contracts with them, but we shouldn't even be having discussions and negotiations about hiring somebody for a job, employment, a consulting job. It doesn't matter. That is not something that we should be involved in on Shabbos. And in addition, V'lo yomar adam l'chaveiro liskor lo po'alim. Don't even tell your friend, hey, do you mind finding some good employees for me? Find me a good contractor. I need an electrician. We shouldn't be talking about these activities on Shabbos. For the next clause, we just need a quick introduction that there's a rabbinic prohibition of going out of the Tchum Shabbos on Shabbos, and Chazal instituted that we have a place of residence, for example, in our town and our city, and we can't go more than 2,000 amos outside of where our residence is. So if we live in by ourselves in the middle of a midbar, middle of the desert, so it's 2,000 amos from where our house is, but if we're in a city, it's from the outskirts of that city that we count another 2,000 amos. And what we're going to talk about here is if somebody wants to walk those 2,000 amos to be ready to do something after Shabbos that he would not be permitted to do on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says as follows, Ein machshichin al hatchum. It's not permitted to wait at the boundary, at the end of the tchum Shabbos. Machshichim is from the Lashon, from the language of choshech. So it means to wait until nightfall. So it's ein machshichin al hatchum. Even on Shabbos, you can't walk to the end of the tchum. You can just walk. You could walk if you have a permitted reason to, if you want to take a nice walk for oneg Shabbos. But if your purpose is liskor po'alim, or lahavi peiros, if your intention is to be at the end of the tchum, so right after Shabbos, you can go out of the tchum and hire employees for that week. We can't be hiring employees on Shabbos, so we also can't prepare and go out to the end of the tchum to be able to do it right after Shabbos. In addition, ulahavi peiros, so if your intention is your field is right outside the tchum or further out and you want to be there and pick some fruit and bring it in, we're not allowed to pick fruit on Shabbos, so we also can't prepare by going to the edge of the tchum in order to do it right after Shabbos. The activities, according to the Tana Kama, and any activity I cannot do on Shabbos, I also cannot go to the end of the tchum in order to be ready to do that activity after Shabbos. Aval, but if it's an activity I can do on Shabbos, then I am permitted to walk to the end of the tchum in order to do that activity right after Shabbos, because I could do the activity anyway. It's permitted to go to the end of the tchum in order to watch over the fields. For example, somebody is concerned he's going to have a theft. So shmira, watching over some field, if it were within the tchum, you can do that on Shabbos. So you can also walk to the end of the tchum during Shabbos and be ready for right after Shabbos in order to watch over your fields which are outside of the tchum. And a similar concept, umevi peiros biado, so in continuation of that, because you went to the end of the tchum for a permitted purpose for shmira, to watch over the field, if you happen to bring fruit back because that was not your main intention, that would also be acceptable. If your intention is to go out to the end of the tchum so then you can go to your field outside of the tchum and bring back fruits, that's not acceptable. But if you have a permitted intention, like Shmira, and then, okay, you also have to happen to bring back fruit, that would not be a problem. Now we have a machlokas, is actually how some of Forshim read it. The machlokas, Abba Shaul says, otherwise, Klal Amar Abba Shul, he's actually more lenient. Even if I can just speak about an activity on Shabbos, and we'll explain what this means in a minute, Rashai ani lachshi chalav, I'm also permitted to go to the end of the tchum and wait till the end of Shabbos. So what's going on here is that Tana Kama was of the view that only if I can do an activity on Shabbos can I also walk to the end of the tchum to be preparing to do that activity after Shabbos outside the tchum. Abba Shaul is coming to say that even if I cannot do that activity on Shabbos, but I can speak about that activity on Shabbos, or things that I can speak about on Shabbos, but I cannot do, then also I am permitted for that purpose to go to the end of the tchum. And Emir Teshem, we'll see in the next Mishnah what Abba Shaul is talking about in particular, that for the purpose of a mitzvah, there's certain mitzvahs we can talk about on Shabbos, but we cannot do. And because we can talk about the mitzvah, Abba Shaul says we can also go to the end of the tchum to do the activity of that mitzvah right after Shabbos. Mishnah Dalet, Abba Shaul brings some examples of mitzvahs that you can prepare and go to the end of the tchum on Shabbos in order to do the mitzvah activity right after Shabbos, even though you cannot do that activity on Shabbos. And in particular, because it's a mitzvah, we can prepare on Shabbos for doing it after Shabbos. So he says as follows examples, machshichim al atchum, it's permitted to go to the end of the tchum and be there for the end of Shabbos when it's choshech, when it's light, for a mitzvah purpose. For example, lefakeach al iske kala, to be involved in attending the needs of hachnasas kala. For example, you need some equipment or whatever it may be for the chasana. You went to get the speaker, the stereo, whatever it may be that's necessary to bring, that would be permitted to go and be ready right after Shabbos to go outside of the tchum to do that mitzvah. And in addition, another example, val iske mace. Somebody passed away and there are needs of that person who did deceased. For example, lahavilo aron, in order to bring a coffin, v'tachrichin, and to bring the burial shrouds for him, that would also be permitted, because even though those activities can't be done on Shabbos, but because we can speak about them and therefore a mitzvah, this is Abba Shaul's opinion, it's permitted to go to the end of the tchum to do them outside the tchum right after Shabbos. Now we're going to continue in talking about some halachas as it relates to funerals and Shabbos, and we're referring back to a concept that we saw in a prior parak, the 16th parak, where it talks about a non-Jew doing work on behalf of a Jew, that a Jew certainly cannot instruct a non-Jew, amir la'akum in isur derabanan, but even if the non-Jew of his own volition does malacha on behalf of the Jew cannot benefit from that until he has waited the amount of time after Shabbos that it would take to do that same malacha. For example, if a non-Jew heated up a jacuzzi, a schwitz for a Jew on Shabbos, the Jew has to wait the amount of time it would take to do that heating again and only then benefit from the jacuzzi. So that's important information for what we're about to see. Nachri shehevi chalilin b'Shabbos, if we have a non-Jew that brought flutes they used to use in the time of Chazal. They used to play sad music at funerals in order to engender emotions and sadness. So if the non-Jew, in preparation of the funeral, brought those flutes on Shabbos and he came from outside the tchum, that's a problem. We are not allowed to use that in the hesped. If that hesped is right after Shabbos, you'd have to wait the amount of time it would take in order to bring the flutes from wherever they came to. So if it took an hour, you have to wait an hour after Shabbos in order to use them. Ela imkein ba'u mimakom karov, unless they came from within the tchum, and then it wouldn't be a problem using them. And continuing in a similar vein, asulo aron v'chaflulo kever, if a non-Jew for himself or for the needs of another non-Jew, if they made an aron, they made a coffin, or v'chaflulo kever, they dug a grave, that was a non-Jew doing something for a non-Jew. Accordingly, yikaver bo Yisrael, it would be permitted for a Jew to use them to use that coffin or use that grave even right after Shabbos, because the work wasn't done on behalf of a Jew. However, conversely, v'im bishvil Yisrael, if the non-Jew did it on behalf of a Jew, he dug that grave, he built that coffin, whatever it is, lo yikaver bo olamis, literally means that can never be used. Now, what it's talking about is that if it was done for a specific Jew, it can never be used to bury that Jew in that casket or in that grave, because that is a disgrace. It would be a disgrace for that mace. Everyone knows that there was a chilul Shabbos done by the non-Jew on behalf of that Jew. Accordingly, it should never be used. However, a different Jew, it can be used to bury a different Jew. You just have to wait then the amount of Kadesh Yasu, the amount of time it would take after Shabbos in order to do the same activity. So whatever time it took to dig the grave or the amount of time that it took to build that coffin, you'd have to wait that amount of time. It's just some interesting halachas in this regard as they relate to our Mishnah, the Orchos Shabbos says as follows, Muta la'amar b'Shabbos ulisbonen be'eza makum be'eza ofen yivda sukasola machar. This is talking about, we said that you can, for a mitzvah, go to the end of the tchum because you can do an analysis and you can do that type of activity to prepare to do the mitzvah after Shabbos. So a similar concept is it's permitted on Shabbos to make an analysis, to think about the place and how you want to build your sukkah the next day, even though building of a sukkah, obviously we cannot do it on Shabbos, but you can think about it on Shabbos to, because it is litzorech of a mitzvah, it's chefsei shemaim, so that would be indeed permitted. We've also been talking about walking somewhere to prepare for something after Shabbos. So a contemporary example would be, can somebody go and stand in a bus stop in order to get the first bus right after Shabbos? So the answer is, says the Orach HaShabbos, if it looks like you're preparing for after Shabbos, it looks like you're standing there in order to wait for the bus, that is indeed a problem. However, if it's, for example, a rainy day, and you're just standing there, it looks like you're under the bus shelter because of the rain, then it would be permitted. But anything that gives off the appearance that you're preparing for after Shabbos, that would be problematic. Another very interesting question, we've talked about a non-Jew bringing something from out of the tchum in our Mishnah. It was talking about bringing the flutes from out of the tchum for use right after Shabbos. How about if a delivery service, if UPS or FedEx delivers something, and they delivered on Shabbos, and it came from outside the tchum. And actually, we would know this nowadays, because when you track a parcel, you can see exactly where that parcel is. So if it came from outside the tchum, we would say maybe it's a problem. He's bringing the non-Jew. The non-Jew is bringing that parcel specifically for a Jew. He came from out of the tchum, just like the chalil, the flute. He can't use it until you wait Kadesh Yasu. Maybe I can't open that parcel until the amount of Kadesh Yasu. It may take the amount of time to rebring it back from out of the tchum. So in fact, that's not correct. The Shmir Shabbos Kehilchasa brings in the name of Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach that if that package was brought from outside, as long as the sender didn't say that it has to be specifically delivered on Shabbos. Let's just say it wasn't checked Saturday delivery or Yontif delivery. Based on that, if it was just sent, it's permitted to have benefit from it. Mutar le'enos mehen bo b'yom on that day. Why? So the reason for that is Kevan Shlo Hevi Avur Yehudi, the person who's delivering it, he didn't bring it specifically for a Jew. It's not like he brought that flute specifically because there's a Jewish wedding that needs it, but rather the person who's delivering it is simply doing his job, and he doesn't care whether it's a Jew or a non-Jew. I just have to bring this parcel. It's irrelevant to him that it's a Jew. Accordingly, we wouldn't have to wait in order to benefit from use of that package. Mishnah Hay continues to discuss what happens when somebody passes away on Shabbos, and we're going to talk particularly about handling the mace, the corpse, on Shabbos. So the Mishnah says as follows, Osin kol tzorchei ha-mace, we may attend to the needs of the body, the person who is deceased. For example, sachin, it's permitted to anoint with oil, umadichin also, or to wash with water. However, ubilvad shelo yazizu bo eiver, we're not permitted to move the body at all. We're not permitted to move any of the limbs of the body. In other words, the body is muksa. Muksa is not a prohibition of touching, but it's a prohibition of moving. So it would be permitted to touch the mace for the needs of the mace, but it would not be permitted to move the mace. Now, an exception is if we move it in an indirect way. So the Mishnah says, Shomtim esakar mitachtav, it's permitted to move the mattress underneath the mace. What's going on here is that if the mace would stay on top of a mattress that's very warm, that will lead to decomposing of the body quicker. So it's permitted to pull the mattress from out underneath the body, umatilin oso alachol, in order for the mace to thereby lie on the sand. The sand is going to keep the body cooler, so it won't lead to decomposition of the body very quickly. In other words, that body cannot be moved directly, but indirectly by pulling the mattress out from underneath the body, that would be permitted. Similar concept. When somebody passes away, the mouth tends to open. So koshrin es halechi, it will be permitted to tie with something the jaw in into its place to keep it from opening further. The Mishnah continues, lo she'aleh, we're not permitted to tie that jaw in order to close it, in order, ya'aleh means to rise, in other words, to make it go closer to the mouth, ela shelo yosi, but rather simply to keep it in its place from opening further. In other words, again, it's permitted to touch the body, but not move the body, including we can't move the jaw further closed. The Mishnah now brings a fascinating, very similar concept to what we just talked about in the context of if something breaks in the house. And the example here is v'chein kora shenishbra, if we have a beam in the ceiling that breaks. We have a support beam that breaks in the house. How? What can you do? So the Mishnah says, somchin osa besafsal, it's permitted to support it with literally a safsal, with a bench, or ba'aruchos hamita, or with boards of a bed, items that are not muksa in of themselves, is permitted to support the ceiling, lo shetale, not in order for us to push the ceiling back into place if it's moved, ela shelotosi, but rather that it should not fall further. In other words, we're not able to violate the isra bona if we're trying to push the ceiling back in place. That's not the case. Just like we were permitted with the mace to keep the jaw in its place, not to go up or down, so too we're permitted to support the ceiling so that the breakage does not continue. The Mishnah now continues in a similar vein of talking about handling of a dead body on Shabbos. Ein ma'amtsin es ha-meis b'Shabbos. It's not permitted to close the eyes of the deceased on Shabbos because, as we mentioned, moving any limb is prohibited because the mace is muksa, so too we can't close the eyes on Shabbos. And the Mishnah adds on that there are actually limitations to closing the eyes of somebody who is about to pass away after Shabbos during a weekday as well. V'lo b'chol im yitzias nefesh. It's not permitted to close the eyes when the soul is about to depart. In other words, it's not a mace yet. The person has not passed away. A gosei, since even somebody who is on the path very close to passing away, is still not a mace. And the Mishnah says accordingly, v'hama'amet im yitzias nefesh. Somebody who does close the eyes of a person who is dying but has not passed away yet. V'hama'amet im yitzias nefesh harezeh shofech damim. This person is considered a murderer because certain touchings of the body of a mace will bring the death sooner. So that is indeed a form of murder if we bring the death sooner, even by just closing the eyes of the mace. Just a couple of interesting shilas as they relate to this Mishnah. We've said here that, for example, with the house, that if the ceiling is starting to collapse a little bit, we can stop it where it is, but you can't fix it anymore. So a very common and more common than that question is if a woman has a tear in her stocking. So some damage is done. It's like the ceiling is starting to cave, but it's there and we can support it. We can stop it from going further. So can a woman stop the tear, the run in the stocking? For example, you can apply certain materials. I think maybe nail polish remover works, but that may be muksa on Shabbos, likely muksa. But how about soap? If soap works, is effective, would it be permitted to apply that to the stocking to stop that run? So Rav Shlomo Sharben Arbach in Shmir Shabbos Kilchas says this is a different situation when it comes to strengthening, stopping the building from caving in. That is something external to the building. We're not making a fix in the building itself. We're simply adding a support beam to the building, so there's no iser of bone. But when you are trying to fix the stocking itself, when you're stopping the stocking, that is putting on a material, for example, the soap, that is making a chizuk, a strengthening in the item itself, and accordingly, that would be prohibited on Shabbos. Another interesting question that we have here is removing of spider webs from a chandelier. So we've said that when it comes to the body, we are permitted to do activities to the body, for example, to wash it with water, to apply, to anoint it with oil, as long as we don't move it. So we see here that certain things for the benefit, cleaning, etc., may be permitted if we're not moving the muksa item. So chandelier is muksa, but how about if I want to clean it on Shabbos? So there may be an argument that there's a need for the day, etc. But truth be told, when it comes to body, that's the kavod mace, it's kavod brios, that's permitted. However, when it comes to cleaning the chandelier, that is something that should have been done before Shabbos. It shouldn't be delayed to Shabbos. The Mishnah Berurah, in fact, paskins Tov lifnos koreakavish. He talks specifically about removing spider webs before Shabbos in order that the house is clean on Shabbos. So even though a woman may have an argument, I'm not moving the muksa, I'm just cleaning, I'm not moving the chandelier, I'm just cleaning it off. Indeed, that should not be done on Shabbos. It should have been done before Shabbos.